Kia ora, tēnā koutou katoa. Welcome to Aaron's Podcast, episode 355. Today is Friday, April 30th, 2021. This is the second version of this episode that I recorded, which has happened to me before, and it was because I didn't like the first version, which has also happened to me before. But this time, it worked out in my favor, because there's some stuff to add on to what I was talking about yesterday, and was going to talk about again today. So it ended up being a serendipitous occurrence. I also should say that I'm fighting a cold or allergies or something, and yes, I'm sure it's not the Rona. And so if my voice is a bit scratchier or perhaps a bit sultrier than normal, that's why. And if I accidentally cough and forget to delete it later in editing, I do sincerely apologize. But here we go. Anyway, I will start, speaking of Corona, as I always do with the vaccination updates. There have been 3.38% of the population has received the first dose of the vaccine, and 1.17% has received the second dose, which means that they're fully vaccinated. Now, that's up from 0.84% the week before the two doses, and up from 2.75% the week before for the one dose. And the numbers are still low, obviously, but apparently the government is still on track for its vaccination program to complete by the end of the year, and they're actually starting to ramp things up a bit. They are moving to the next group, which are those who are 65 and up, and also those who are under 65 with underlying health conditions that may make them at higher risk of disease, and that includes people like me. And that opens tomorrow, May 1st, and then in July, the rest of the population will also be able to get their vaccines. So we'll see. The government sent out brochures to all the households in New Zealand. I got mine yesterday, and it talks about the vaccine and a lot of stuff that I already knew. It was nothing new to me anyway. And as I understand it, they will contact us about an appointment for a vaccine. And I believe that they do that by phone, but I could be wrong. I'll find out. I'll let you know when I know, because it's apparently going to be a while before I know. But anyway, but speaking of COVID-19 more generally, we continue to have issues with the travel bubble. Earlier this week, a man flew from Perth to Auckland, and it was when Perth itself was during lockdown, and he flew from Perth to Sydney, where he was supposed to board a flight to Auckland. However, the fact he was coming from Perth, which was under lockdown, and therefore flights to New Zealand were suspended, quarantine-free flights to New Zealand were suspended, his first flight was canceled, and he managed to rebook on a different flight and then flew on. Now, apparently he did know that he was not allowed to do that, and when he arrived in Auckland, he went up to Northland, and when he was identified, he was told to self-isolate for 14 days. Then he came back to Auckland and went into managed isolation. Now, I have not seen any reporting, that, at least not that I've found, that explains why that happened, why he suddenly went from self-isolation to managed isolation. I don't know if the health authorities thought that was a good idea, or if he did, or what the story is. So I can't speculate. However, if he is charged, tried, and convicted, he could face a fine of $4,000 and 6 months in jail for having done this, because it was apparently deliberate. But the government is still investigating as to whether or not they're going to prosecute at all, which is, well, what you'd expect. You'd want them to get all the information in. But, so that's a bit of a worry, because our border is our weakest link. The only way the virus can get into New Zealand is through the border. And this shows what can happen if one person willfully ignores the rules and manages to slip through the border. They could end up infecting the entire country. As last I heard, his test results had not come back yet, so I don't know if he's positive or not, but it doesn't really matter, because he's got to isolate for 14 days anyway, and he would have to be like anybody who was quarantined. He would have to return a negative result on day 1, 3, and 14, or thereabouts in 14. And last I heard, I did see in the news, though, they were still trying to decide whether they were going to charge him for the MIQ stay or not, because normally you book in and you then you pay for it yourself. So we'll see what happens. I don't know. But, you know. Meanwhile, there's been another breach of the travel bubble. This one was apparently accidental, human error, it's been called, at Brisbane Airport. And what happened is that there were two passengers who flew in from Port Moresby, which is in Papua New Guinea, and they were accidentally allowed from the red zone, where high-risk passengers are, and transit passengers, and allowed into the green zone, which is where the quarantine-free people are. And they spent about 2 hours or so in the green zone. They spent most of it at a cafe, and apparently, and then other times they shopped and just wandered around and used a public toilet. And throughout their time in the, according to CCTV, they were masked, they maintained social distance. When they left the cafe, the table was immediately wiped, although you don't know if they used the proper disinfectant stuff because they didn't know they needed to, so I don't know. And but since then, the public toilets have been cleaned and general stuff like that. But there were about 400, more or less, people in the departures area at the airport waiting to fly to New Zealand. And some of them had reasonably close contact, although apparently not terribly close. But nevertheless, all 400 people were advised to monitor their health for the next couple of weeks and to stay home if they're sick and get a test if they're feeling unwell. And so this is just an ongoing issue. In this case, the first one I talked about, a guy deliberately chose to avoid the quarantine, the measure, the suspension in travel. Because I talked about that in the beginning when I talked about the bubble, how there was a pause that would be done. And if there was a local outbreak, and that's what happened with Perth, he deliberately avoided that to come to New Zealand. So that was one sort of breach. The one in Brisbane is another kind of breach where just ordinary human error somehow let this guy through. And then today it was announced that there was a third breach, this time going to Australia. And it was a passenger who flew from Rarotonga, which is Cook Islands, and he flew to Auckland. Now, people can fly from the Cook Islands to New Zealand quarantine-free, but they were required to stay in New Zealand for 14 days before they travel anywhere else. He didn't. I think it's a he. Actually, no, I'm just assuming because so far most of them have been. The passenger flew to New Zealand and was supposed to stay here for 2 weeks, didn't. They boarded a flight. Instead, they boarded a flight. Boarded a flight for Australia and flew off there. And that was the fault of Air New Zealand because they didn't realize that until the passenger was already on the flight. And that particular one was going to Perth. And so then they alerted authorities while they were in flight. And so far I haven't heard what else is going to happen. And I'm not clear on whether this was a deliberate breach or if the passenger didn't know they were supposed to stay in New Zealand for 2 weeks or what the story is. But that's actually not the point here either. It's not the specifics of what they knew, when they knew it, and who's responsible and whose fault it is, all that sort of stuff. The issue here is that this is the third incident this week in which there has been a potential, well, there has been a breach of the quarantine-free travel bubble. And this is how the virus is going to get into one country or the other, more likely here, because especially in the Brisbane breach, somebody coming from Papua New Guinea, which is a COVID hot zone, has a really high potential for transmitting the virus. And as it happens, one of the pair has returned a weak positive, which they're investigating to see if it might be an historic case. So it's probably not an ordinary positive case. As it happens today, I think it's 2 days in a row, we've had no new cases either in managed isolation or in the community. So that's a good thing. We have them at the border all the time in managed isolation, which is fine because they're restricted there and they're not going to be able to infect the rest of the population. But it's such a potential disaster that's really waiting to happen. And if it does happen, then, you know, I don't know. I said at the beginning that I was really uneasy about all this, and this is why, because there's human nature Some people will try to get around the rules if they can. Other people will make mistakes purely by without intent. You know, they just accidentally do things. And either one of those could very easily infect one or the or both countries. So I really hope they get their act together before we get into the next week of this travel bubble. We shall see. I also mentioned last time that India had a travel ban, that people from India couldn't travel to New Zealand. And by people, I really mean just citizens, permanent residents, and other permit holders, because they're the only ones who are allowed into New Zealand anywhere at the moment, apart from critical skills people, like all the people working on the Avatar films and all that kind of stuff. So this week, the travel ban was lifted, but with some restrictions. India is considered a very high-risk country, not surprisingly, and so they're treated differently than ordinary risk countries. And I don't know all of the details of what that means precisely, except that in the case of India, only New Zealand citizens are allowed to return directly to New Zealand. Anyone who is a permanent resident or has a temporary permit or visa has to travel to a different country and stay there for 14 days before they travel to New Zealand. The problem is that there's pretty much nobody who is flying out of India. None of the major airlines are. They're not accepting passengers who have been in India for 14 days prior to their departure. So essentially, all of the New Zealand citizens, permanent residents, and temporary permit holders are stranded in India because there's nobody who can fly them out. Now, the government so far has ruled out any sort of expatriation flights to go in there and pick up the people and bring them back. And I'm not sure that they should. I think that's could be a potentially really bad idea for a whole bunch of reasons, not the least of which is the out-of-control infection there. But, yeah, so it is a topic of much discussion, as you might imagine. And everybody has an opinion. Some of them are racist. Some of them are not. Some of them are a little bit this, a little bit that kind of thing. It's a very, very difficult situation. But as we have been for more than a year now, we are in completely uncharted territories, we meaning the world. And we've got to figure this out as we go along. And we might make mistakes along the line. At the moment, I don't think that the government is making a mistake with India, because its first responsibility is to keep New Zealand safe. And everything after that is they do everything after they've already fulfilled that requirement. So they're trying to strike a balance between letting citizens and permit holders back into New Zealand and protecting the New Zealand people. And right now, I think that the balance is good. I might change my opinion in a week or two. You never know. But for right now, I think it's probably a good outcome. That's not exactly the word I'm looking for, but essentially, it's a good choice. We'll put it that way. Now, since I last podcasted, it's now been a week that my solar system has been switched on. And so I've had a chance to evaluate how it works. And it's been really interesting. I mean, part of it is because it's a bit geeky, but also because I just want to know how it's going to go and how it's going to work. Now, we are, of course, in mid to late autumn here in New Zealand, the second half of autumn. And so the sun gets up relatively late. It gets up the sun rises around 7 in the morning, a little bit earlier than that, I think. And or maybe it's later by now even. Anyway, we'll say around 7. And it sets relatively early as well. And it's also higher, all of which affects, you know, where the sun is and how it hits it's not higher, it's lower. And all of that can potentially affect how much power I can generate. So the first day that it was on, which is Friday of last week, I went out and at 9:38, when I got up, which was sometime before 9, it was generating about 400 watts, which is like nothing. But by 9:30, it was up to 1.6 kilowatts. And it kept going up and up and up until it eventually hit a maximum of 4.6 kilowatts for the day, which is just 400 watts shy of the maximum output of the panels. And so I was, you know, reasonably happy with that. I was more interested than I was, you know, concerned or whatever. So since then, we've had some rainy days, and I saw that with relatively low output, something like 1.6 kilowatts or thereabouts. And what I do, the advice I got from the company was to not run more than one appliance at a time, a big one. And there's a good reason for that, because if I use up all of my free power, then I've got to buy some from the power company. And it, well, first of all, it's a cost, but also they charge me more than they pay me for the power that I generate. So it's in my best interest to try to keep the things that I use myself free, the powered for free. So, for example, the other day I ran the dishwasher in the morning when the sun was just starting to rise a bit, and I went off and did things I had to do around the house. And then when it was done, the sun was higher, so I put on a load of washing, and because it heats the water itself. That's the main electricity, really. And when it was done, the sun was higher still, so I put that in the dryer and then put another load of washing on. And yesterday, I didn't have any more washing to do, so I did my ironing when the sun was on. The sun was on makes it sound like it's got a switch. And so that's the sort of thing that I'll do. But none of that is particularly new or different. I always do my laundry in the daytime anyway, so I can change loads and stuff like that. That's not at all unusual. The only thing that was unusual is that I ran the dishwasher in the daytime. I normally would turn it on when I go to bed. So it's just a slight modification in the way I do things. And the only further modification is that I'll do that sort of stuff mostly on the bright sunny days, which isn't exactly a huge burden. It's more of a burden maybe for the dishwashing, because sometimes you run out of stuff, and if it's a week of rainy weather, as it could be in wintertime, I may have to just bite the bullet and hope for the best. But it's way too early to know how this is going to pay off financially. I did get my first bill since it was connected over the weekend. I don't remember what day, it doesn't matter. And as it happens, this bill was 18% higher than the previous month. And the reason, there's several reasons for that. One is that the first bill was only for a partial month because I switched power companies the month before. So this was a full month. The second thing is that I'm now using the heat at night because it's getting cold now that it's getting later in autumn on to winter. So both of those would use more power. And also they read the meter on the 20th, which was the same day that the 22nd, which is the same day that the system was turned on. And so they gave me a credit. The total that they're charging me included a credit of $1.44, which is their payment to me for the power I generated during those few hours that the system was on before the meter was read. Assuming it was even hours, I don't know how long it was, because I think I also did some laundry that day too. So far, it hasn't exactly been a financial boon, because I'm paying more power this month than the previous, and I only got $1.44 for generating power. But this was only a few hours of solar generated power, and I'm sure that in the future it'll end up much more balanced. But of course, as I said before, I'm not doing this for money. I'm not doing this to make money. Ideally, I'll have drastically reduced power bills. That's what I'm hoping for. But I'm mainly doing it because I can, and I think I should because of that. It's about putting my values in action. So that's really the reason I'm doing it. But I do expect that when all the dust settles, that I will at least have very heavily discounted power bills, if not free. I don't think I'm ever going to come out ahead, but as long as I break even or just nearly break even, I'm good with that. That would be a great result, in my opinion. Now, I'm not going to be talking about this all the time. I'm probably planning on blogging on it at 3 and 6 months and a year. And so I'll probably not talk about it here until then either, unless something unusual happens or whatever. But that's the plan anyway. So far that's in place, that's going, and that's all wonderful and hunky-dory. Now, a couple of last items about podcasting, actually. First, as you may already know, especially if you looked at my blog or podcast site, I was recently on the Archer Radio with Paul. The episode is called Catching Up with Arthur. It's about an hour and 15 long, I think it is, or something like that. And the first 45 minutes-ish or whatever, we mainly talk about my grief journey and where I'm at and where I'm going and all those sorts of things, and even some stuff about the house. And I've talked about it. I talk about it more there than I have anywhere else. What's the word I'm looking for? I was going to say verbally, but that writing is technically verbal. That I've talked about at voice-wise. drawing a blank. And because, as you know, I've blogged extensively about all of this and continue to do so. So in the course of that, Paul asked me a question that nobody has ever asked me. And I've come to refer to it as the elephant in the room question, because nobody's asked me, but I strongly suspect that people want to know the answer to it. The people who know me well anyway want to know the answer to it, but they don't want to ask for whatever reason, and that's fine. And I'll talk about that here on an upcoming episode and also in my blog. But in the meantime, if you want to hear that, you can go to archer.com. Actually, you can just go to my blog and podcast site. There's a thingy there that you can click on, and I'll put one in the show notes for this one too. Not that anybody does show notes much anymore, but anyway, that's where it'll be, so it'll be easy to get to. But speaking of that, I've had a bit of a dilemma for about a year, really. It actually started last year, and that's that I've felt uncomfortable talking about my grief journey here in this podcast, which doesn't make sense in a way, because this podcast and my blog, for that matter, have always been about honesty and authenticity. And not talking about what I'm going through is neither honest nor authentic. It's kind of hiding it or pretending it's not there. And that's not exactly a rational thing to do for a personal journal, podcast, and blog. So I'm still trying to figure out what that balance is. And I will talk about my grief journey more in the future. I think what my plan is at this stage is that I'll do, well, like today, putting it at the end of the podcast, so anybody who doesn't want to hear such things can just stop there. And other times I may do separate episodes that are more general about grief as a topic and dealing with grief as a topic. And if that's the case, they'll be labeled something or other. I'll decide what later. And it'll be in addition to my normal podcast, because those will be different. They won't be time specific. And they may even be a bit more scripted. They'd be a bit scripted. I have never scripted these podcasts and it shows. But that's where what I'm thinking right now, because there are things I should talk about because it's dishonest not to. Things are not wonderful. Things are pretty shitty. And despite the fact that I have some really good things going on, and despite the fact that I have some really good days, there is this other thing out there that's all around me and permeates my life, and I don't talk about it. And that's just not right. So I'm going to start doing more of that. And part of the reason I do this is the same reason I blog about it. I hope that somebody will find something in it that they can use, maybe just a small kernel even. I know that for my health journey in particular, but also with my grief journey, people have found it useful for something that they're going through, or perhaps that someone they love is going through. The thing is that all of us, sooner or later, one way or another, will have to deal with grief, either our own or that of somebody we love and care about. And what I'm hoping is that I can help people, even in a small way, to deal with grief better. Because I want to bring something good and positive out of this horrible experience. And the only thing I can think of to do is to use the skills I've developed over the years by blogging and podcasting to try to bring that level of comfort and understanding and a sense that someone's not alone, that I've gone through a lot of that sort of stuff too, and it's okay. It's okay to not be okay as well. I said on Paul's podcast that I'm okay and okay is good enough. That's absolutely true, but it's also okay to not be okay. And I will talk about all of that sort of stuff more in the future. But I should say that most days I'm okay. I really am okay most days. The dogs are very entertaining, especially Leo, as you may have gathered from my various social media feeds. Well, mostly Instagram. and in my blog. But other than that, you know, things, they're just going along. We're now coming into the colder months, so I'll probably do more in the house now. But I'll have more to say about that in the months ahead, too. I've got so much to do that I haven't yet even begun to do. And that's all related to all of this. And I haven't talked about any of that, partly because it's related to my grief journey, and I didn't want to get into that. So you see, you can see the conundrum, perhaps. But anyway, that's it for today. That's it for this week. I hope you have a great weekend. I know I'll have a good weekend. I don't think I have any plans. That's why I hesitate. But one way or another, I'll talk to you next week. Kakete ono. Bye. You can comment on this or any episode of the Ehrman's Podcast at ehrmanspodcast.com, where you can also leave a voice message. You can visit and comment on the Ehrman's Facebook page, or you can email me, with or without a voice message, at ehrmans@gmail.com. This podcast is a proud member of the Pride 48 Network and is produced and distributed under Creative Commons license. Complete details at the website.